This is Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network.
What's going on, everybody? Happy Wednesday as we welcome you into Money Moves on VSiN, the sports betting network. Sirius XM, channel 158. Stormy Bonantoni with you live in downtown Las Vegas. Circa Resort and Casino, the home of the world's largest sports book, alongside today, cross country, Ariel Epstein out in NYC. And girl, I said happy Wednesday, but I don't know if I believe it, because not that anybody cares about this. The internet is making me very upset this morning that this thing is going around right now that as of today, July 2nd, we are now closer to the year 2050 than we are the year 2000. And I just didn't need that energy today. That's what I'm coming into the day with. And I need to turn things around.
I did not expect you to go that direction. It was also weird last week when I was at my younger brother's high school graduation. Yes, my parents decided to have a third 13 years after me. And I'm watching class of 2025. That just seems insane, Stormy.
Girl, we're in the same boat. I have a younger sister who is 11 years old. She's still not even in high school yet. Like, the struggle is so real. Plus yesterday, Red Panda goes down. Is what is happening to the last 24 hours. I just don't need these vibes right now. We got to turn it around. We got to get some positivity. Hopefully win some bets.
Here's the positivity. The positivity is it's a short week. It's 4th of July. So we kind of don't have to worry about Fridays for most normal people.
You know what? We're on a Wednesday, midweek. We are closer to Friday than we are to Monday. There's my spin.
There you go.
There we go. I feel much better about things as we go. And like I mentioned, hopefully we also win some bets today. We got a couple great guests on deck. David Behrman is going to join us in about 15 minutes. He's going to give us the lowdown on the John Deere Classic coming up. The PGA Tour season rolls on. We'll also have Ian McMillan join us later on in hour two. He's got golf bets, talk plenty of NHL trades that are going on. And, I mean, he's got baseball bets. Ian always comes locked and loaded with everything. But a handful of items we've got to get to as well. So let's kick off the show like we always do off the top. Time for the rundown.
It's time for the top headlines and topics of the day. This is the rundown.
Number three in our top three items on the program today, the AFC North. The VSiN NFL betting guide dropped earlier this week. All week long, we are spotlighting different sections. And with you being a Baltimore Ravens fan and all of the news that we've had coming out around the Pittsburgh Steelers this week, I felt like this division was appropriate.
I really appreciate it. It always makes me laugh when I come on shows. Everyone asks me to preview the AFC North, and every time I say, we all know how this is going to end. The Ravens are going to look really good and then break my heart.
It hurts so much how our teams do that year after year after year. But maybe this could be the year, and we'll talk about why in just a little bit later on this hour. Also, why not Wednesday like we do every Wednesday on the program, looking at some fun plus money options out there or just situations that make you want to say, why not? And of course, it's also a loaded Major League Baseball day. Lots of interesting games and pitcher edges across the board. I know I've got a couple sides I like. Ariel's locked and loaded with props as usual. And while we'll get into this a little bit later, you were texting us about this morning. Clayton Kershaw very likely to hit a major MLB milestone today in his start against the White Sox.
Yeah, Clayton Kershaw is just a few strikeouts away from getting to 3,000, just being the 20th pitcher in history to do so. It's funny, Stormy, how gambling helps us with our research, because I'm just scrolling through like FanDuel this morning and DraftKings. Sorry, we have to say DraftKings. DraftKings this morning, and I'm looking at all these different props, and I see Kershaw, 3,000. I said, oh my gosh, wait, he's going to hit 3,000? His strikeout prop's 4.5. He needs 4, I'm pretty sure. I think he's at 2,996. It's a lot of strikeouts.
Yeah, I know. It's like
They interviewed the first strikeout of Kershaw's career, like the batter. I forget his name, but it's crazy how you go down in history that way.
Yeah, I saw that on the New York Times and how it apparently still haunts him. That's fun. Kershaw on the hill for the White Sox. Listen to this price. -337 to win this game on the money line. Run total 9. Of the 19 previous pitchers, by the way, who have reached 3,000 strikeouts, only 3 did it faster than Kershaw likely will. Randy Johnson, Max Scherzer, and Pedro Martinez, if you've ever heard of them. So pretty darn good company to be in for him. Also, wanted to give you a shout out while we're on the theme of pitchers. I was doubting you yesterday on Max Fried under his K prop. given some of the numbers that we had seen from him, but the trend was your friend going against Toronto. He only had two. You nailed that handicap yesterday.
I'm pretty sure it was one strikeout through like his first four or five innings. Max Fried goes way under his 5.5. This has now, Stormy, been one of my favorite trends in all of baseball. Looking at how the Toronto Blue Jays have done this season against lefty starters, you've now seen 14 of the 21 lefties to face the Jays go under their strikeout prop. It's insane.
Ridiculous. 12-5 win yesterday for the Blue Jays in that one, by the way. Fried gave
that was terrible. We didn't need to talk about that part.
Sorry. Just making people aware.
But I'm happy for Canada. It was Canada Day, so it was good for them.
Yeah, and Ian McMillan, by the way, a resident Canadian who's going to be joining us in hour two, as I mentioned. I wonder how he's feeling that on Canada Day, yes, he did get a Blue Jays win, but it was also the day the Mitch Marner trade became official as a Maple Leafs guy. So we'll get into that a little bit. That's not the way you want to celebrate.
Bittersweet.
We do have a couple MLB games that are going to get underway here shortly. The Athletics and Rays about 5 minutes away from first pitch there. Rays taking the overnight money up from minus 185 to around a $2. Some places even higher that price right now. Ryan Pepiot going for Tampa. Mitch Spence on the hill for the A's. The run total here at 9 with slight juice on the under. Was there anything that stood out to you in the early game of the day?
Pepiot over his strikeouts at 6.5. You could get around plus 110. He's getting an A's team that averages just over 5 strikeouts a game, which is on the higher end. 6 of the last 10 have actually gone over 6.5 when facing the A's, which when you think about the number 6.5, it's really high. Most strikeout props, 4.5, 5.5. 6.5 means, wow, this person's at like a Paul Skenes, Tarek Skubal level. And Pepiot getting the A's, so he's gone over 6.5 Ks in 4 of 6 against high K rate teams, Pepiot. I always like when a pitcher's at home. So over 6.5 and plus money, Stormy, not bad value for a game starting in about 3 minutes.
Yeah, and by the way, yeah, get in there quickly if you want any involvement on that game. We also have the Cardinals and Pirates set to get underway in about 20 minutes. Pirates on a 5-game win streak. They swept the Mets earlier this past week, claimed back-to-back shutouts now in their first 2 wins of this 3-game set against St. Louis. And while the Pirates' bats have looked better today, lately, I think they might struggle today against Sonny Gray. What did you take away from this pitching matchup, Sonny Gray and Mitch Keller going head-to-head?
I found this to be a very fishy line, Stormy. Okay. I saw St. Louis minus 138 last night. They dropped to around minus 120 this morning. And you're saying Sonny Gray, and he is great. But his ERA goes up from just over 2 to just over 4 when he's on the road. Mitch Keller has had one of the worst lucks in baseball this year, if that's even like a way to say it. His offense just sucks. Like the Pirates can't score. The Pirates, prior to their last game where Mitch Keller started and they scored 9 against the Mets, prior to that, the Pirates were averaging just over 2 runs of support when Mitch Keller was on the mound. His 6 losses in quality starts is the most in Major League Baseball. So even though Mitch Keller has had he's top 10 in quality starts this year, the Pirates are 4-13 in his starts because their offense can't score. But the fact that this line moved in favor of the Pirates, despite over 80% of action coming in on Sonny Gray and the Cardinals, it tells me the sharp money's coming in on the Pirates. Mitch Keller's not a bad pitcher. He's better at home. I would be looking at the Pirates here, to be honest with you, Stormy.
Yeah, at a nice plus 107 price available right now. But yeah, you look at those numbers for Keller, 2-10, 3.90 ERA, 1-7 at home this season. But to your point about the run support, yes, they beat the Mets in his last start on Friday, 9-1, but 3-2 loss, 3-2 loss, 3-2 loss, 3. Like, it's crazy that the bats just have not helped him out at all.
It's actually just rude.
It's just rude.
It's just rude.
Leave it to Pirates to be rude. That actually checks pretty well.
Last
couple minutes here, I did want to give a little shout out to the WNBA. I've got a fever, and the only prescription is apparently more fever because they won the Commissioner's Cup yesterday as a 10.5-point dog without Caitlin Clark. And I thought, good for them. That is so cool, especially against the team that is the best in the league right now. Everybody's doubting you. You don't have your superstar, and they go out and get the dub anyways.
I love it, the fight. And I feel like they're one of those teams – when you have a Tom Brady, a Patrick Mahomes, and everyone just wants to beat you because everyone wants to beat Caitlin Clark, it's just so fitting that they end up winning and covering as a 10.5-point dog.
10.5-point dog. They win by 15, 74-59, the final there. Obviously, the hope is that Clark gets back healthy soon with a groin injury, but doing just fine without her. Meanwhile, in Wimbledon, as we just continue like our recap of last night, the losses and upsets just continue to go crazy. I know we had Ben Wilson on the program yesterday, and he said Coco Gauff could be facing a potential landmine. She falls to unseeded Diana Yastremska. See, brutal. The pronunciations are so hard for me in tennis. But a straight set loss for her at the All England Club. Second time in the last 3 years she's lost in the first round at Wimbledon. Fourth time overall in a Grand Slam. And with that, guys, and I'm not even a big tennis person, but it's Wimbledon. You have to follow it. You have to be involved in it. It is crazy to see the upsets on both sides. In total, we have 8 combined top 10 seeds with the men's and women's tournaments that are out of the field. On the men's side, it's the first time since 1998 that 4+ top 10 seeds have lost in the opening round. As you look at the odds board here, still a lot of top dogs, obviously, available and still in the field. On the men's side, Carlos Alcaraz, a plus 125 favorite to win it all. Jannik Sinner close behind at plus 150. And Djokovic plus 650 for the women. Sabalenka remains your short shot at plus 200. Elena Rybakina plus 450. And Iga Swiatek plus 650. So still a lot of big names involved, but just wild to see at Wimbledon, at the All England Club, how many of these big name tennis products are going down? Okay, we've got to take our first time out of the day. Excited to get into a little PGA Tour action when we come back. David Behrman, betting analyst, covers just about everything daily in the Betting with Behrman newsletter. He's going to help us break it all down. And I got to give our guy a little love. He is a Florida man, and some interesting stuff's going on in his state right now. We'll be right back.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Alongside Ariel Epstein, Stormy Bonantoni with you back here on Money Moves, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. And right now, up at VSiN.com, you got to check out all of the content we have live for our VSiN Pro subscribers. Greg Peterson with his MLB Best Bets, Locked and Loaded. Zach Cohen breaking down all of the NBA transactions and what that means for not only the odds, but ways to potentially get involved here early. Plus, our NFL betting guide is out now. When you're a VSiN Pro subscriber, you get access to not only the NFL betting guide, but every other guide that comes out from now through the Super Bowl. Head over to VSiN.com/subscribe today. Get in on the action for just $175 as we welcome you back to the program. Super excited to have our next guest on deck. David Behrman joins us here on the Progressive Guest Line. Betting analyst, covers just about everything daily in the Betting with Behrman newsletter, BehrmanBets.com. You can also follow him on X at David Behrman. And before we get into all of the golf talk, very excited to hear your picks on the John Deere Classic and beyond. But you are a Florida man through and through. And last time we had you on the program, we were hyping you up. You said that the Florida Panthers were going to win it all. They won it all. And now they're not only favorites to go ahead and potentially three-peat, but they re-signed all of the big dogs. You get your Conn Smythe winner, Sam Bennett, back. Aaron Ekblad is signed. Brad Marchand even signed. It's a good day to be you, I have a feeling.
It is, and you got to give credit to the players and Bill Zito for what they've done down there in Florida. You're talking about a franchise that was utterly irrelevant for a quarter century. Not only have they gone back-to-back championships, but like you said, they've signed them all through 2030. So the D word has been said a lot around there with dynasty, and it's funny. In South Florida lore, it begins and ends with the 1970s Dolphins, 71, 72, 73, three straight Super Bowls, undefeated season, etc. And then you got the 4 years of the Miami Heat with four straight finals, two titles, LeBron James, Dwayne Wade, and Chris Bosh. But now you got the Florida Panthers who have gone to three straight cup finals. And like you said, bringing everybody back, this is a team that is built to last for the next 3 to 5 years. And it's scary to think about how many titles they can win.
Let's switch over to the PGA. We've got the John Deere Classic coming up. And first things first, we have to know what the heck to know about this course.
Yeah, the John Deere Classic is a typical TPC course where it's tree-lined, but it is wider with wider fairways and bigger greens. It turns into a birdie fest, but it's also one of those tournaments that gets exciting because usually it comes down to the wire. We've seen multiple people play off here with a birdie fest and wide open greens and wide open fairways. You tend to need to have the wedge game. We need players. It's not a place where you're going to overpower the course with long drivers. It's usually won by people who have good wedge games and people who have not necessarily won on tour before. Ariel, you're looking at a field that is among the weakest fields of the season. Simply put, you've had a couple of majors, you've had a couple of signature events, and everyone's going overseas for the Scottish Open and the Open Championship for the next 2 weeks. So what you're left with is a bunch of players who want to get that first PGA Tour win or second PGA Tour win. So it'll be an interesting event. Expect a lot of birdies and expect a birdie fest out there.
Yes, and listen, I love Ben Griffin as much as anyone. He has been a top 20 cash cow for us on this program. We are big Ben Griffin fans. We are not used to seeing him be the shortest shot on the board at 16-1, but he is your favorite. We also have the last week's Rocket Classic winner, 20-year-old Aldrich Potgieter, in the field at 35-1. There's six former champions in the field, including the defending John Deere champion Davis Thompson at 30-1. How do you feel about these favorites and the fact that, you know, 30-1, 16-1 to 30-1 is in that favorites range for an event like this?
Full transparency, I love Ben Griffin. The price scares me at 16-1. You just hit it on the head. You didn't expect this guy to be the favorite. He has been a cash cow. This is a guy that has six straight top 15 finishes. I wanted to play him all across the board. I am going to play him. I'm going to play him at a top 10 finish at plus 170 because the 16-1 value isn't good. I was hoping to get him in the 20-30-1 range. It's just hard to put your money on a guy that has the odds that low in a field like this. Now, he does have two wins this year. We talked about the top 15 finishes. I will be playing him in the top 10. I'm going to watch him live, hopefully get a better price than that. The rest of the card is kind of sprinkled with guys you may have heard of, may not have heard of. I like Michael Thorbjornsson. I know that's a mouthful, but he's a guy who contended last week. He had been out about a month, so not many people played him last week. But he got back. He finished T4, missing the playoff at the Rocket Mortgage by one shot. And by the way, he finished T2nd at the John Deere Classic last year. I like him. He's a guy who plays very well at courses like this against fields that are pretty weak. Finished T4 at Zurich and T2 at Corrales. And the other thing this course is known for is sort of like a time machine. Steve Stricker, Zach Johnson, these are names that have won at this course before, where 40-year-old men all of a sudden act like they're 25 and win the event. I'm looking at a Lucas Glover. He's at 40-1. He's had success here before, winning this in 2001 and also finished T6 and T23 the last 2 years. He had a T10 in 2019. He's someone who's played this well before. And oh, by the way, he's coming off a T9 in Connecticut to Travelers. This is the type of course that a 45-year-old Lucas Glover can absolutely win at.
David, give us some top finishers. I always love the top 10s, top 20s. What you got?
Those are my favorite plays to play. Obviously, the outrights are more like lottery tickets in golf, especially with this field. I like Denny McCarthy to finish in the top 20. He's going to be a very popular play in the markets. He's 25-1. I like him top 20 at plus 125. That's what he's done here. He has three straight top 10 finishes at this course, T6, T6, T7. He's someone that I think can do that again. He's as close to a horse for course guy as you're going to get. Hasn't had the wins, so I'm going to play him in the top 20. Other top finishes I like Kevin Yu to finish in the top 20 at plus 160. He's T6 and T20 here in his two trips. Also finished third at Myrtle Beach and fourth at the Canadian Open. Feels very similar to this. And I'll be playing Alex Smalley, which, take with a grain of salt, this guy's either going to make the cut or win the entire thing because he's either hot or cold. I like him somewhere in the middle at top 20. He tied for second here 2 years ago and is a really, really good course fit. Eight top 25s on the season. I think Alex Smalley gets it done in the top 20. And my final play on the board is a matchup. 72-hole matchup. Make sure you click on the tournament matchup and not one-round matchup. Luke Clayton, young guy, finished T2 here last year. I'm playing him at plus money over Siwoo Kim. Siwoo Kim has the better resume, but he's also a guy who's never even made the weekend here in his three appearances.
So last thing on the John Deere Classic before we move on. I know that it's always good to look at players and analyze who you want to bet on, but were there players that caught your eye as guys you wanted to stay off of, or you hear other players talking about and you're just like, I can't get there, and why?
There are just a couple of players that aren't good for this course. If you're looking at guys who just bomb the course away, it's not somebody that I would play because this is not the type of course where you're going to take advantage off the tee. It's more of a value thing to me, looking down the board, seeing guys that 20-1 and 25-1 like Denny McCarthy, who would normally be 40 or 50-1. I know a lot of people are on Zach Johnson this week because he's played here before. Zach Johnson is not someone who's in good form at all, so I would stay away from him. But basically, I'd be looking for the guys who were good with tree line courses and guys who basically have good wedge games. And ultimately, you need to putt. It's very large greens, and the advantage that you're going to have here is if you get hot with the putter. So I'd watch what guys do the first 2 days and play guys who get hot with the putter and the flat stick, because it's going to be pretty even off the tee with most of these guys.
David, before we let you go, you know that I'm a big Ravens fan. That Steelers-Dolphins trade, and I know you're a Dolphins fan. What were your thoughts, Jalen Ramsey, Minka Fitzpatrick, Jonnu Smith, when that all went down?
My thoughts are the Dolphins are not a better team than they were 2 days ago before the trade, giving up Jonnu Smith and Jalen Ramsey, getting Minka Fitzpatrick, who was coming off his worst season, and then going and getting Darren Waller off the retirement heap. That being said, they did what they needed to do for the franchise, getting rid of two players who did not want to be there, either because they were done with the style of play or they wanted a long-term contract that the Dolphins weren't going to give. They cleared some cap room. They'll have some cap room for next season. So they did good by the salary cap and by the culture. But if I'm a Dolphins fan, I don't think they're any better today than they were before, unless you wind the clock back to 2019 when Minka and Darren Waller were all pro players. If you get those two back from 2019, then the Dolphins did a great service here. At the end of the day, they needed to clean up the clubhouse a little bit, as they say in baseball, get the right culture guys in there, and clear up some cap room for next year, if assuming Chris Greer and Mike McDaniel are back next year. I don't think the team's any better. I still think they're going to be a 7-9 win team. Didn't really move the needle either way, but at least they got players who want to play as opposed to those who are looking to leave.
Yeah, that win total then probably appropriately priced at 7.5. It is just weird looking at the division odds board and seeing the Patriots above them based on how they have performed the last couple of years. David, thank you so much for the time. We really, really appreciate your insight.
Thanks for having me on. See you next week.
Yes, David Bearman, everybody. And again, make sure you check out the Betting with Bearman newsletter, BearmanBets.com, how you can become a subscriber and follow him on X at David Bearman. And that's a great segue, Ariel, because coming up in the next segment, we're going to get into the AFC North. We're going to talk a little bit more about what that move meant for the Steelers, how your Ravens look, and if they're going to win the division and then break your heart. We'll get into that and more. Stick around, more NFL talk with our NFL betting guide out now. Don't forget. Get time to join us, VSiN.com/subscribe. Get all of the access to everything we do here, as well as this NFL betting guide, comprehensive, full team and division breakdowns everywhere across the NFL.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Need a proxy? You can join the world's biggest football contest with one trip to Vegas anytime before the season starts. Trusted by thousands of players over the last 9 seasons, Winner's Circle Proxy Service helps clients win over $9.3 million over the last 2 football seasons. Learn more about using a trusted proxy at winnercircleproxy.com/vsin. Again, that's winnercircleproxy.com/vsin. We saw everybody getting set up last week. Circa Million, Circa Survivor, everybody getting excited for the NFL and college football season as well. It'll be here before we know it. Training camp's just a couple weeks away. And with that, we've been talking about it all week. Our VSiN NFL betting guide is officially out. And as we've kind of just been going through different articles, thought it would be fun on our shows as well to go through and do different breakdowns and touch on some of the things that we're seeing in the betting guide. And of course, we have Ariel, who is a Baltimore Ravens expert. I know you cover all sports and you're great in the NFL, but you are a Ravens fan, so you know this team inside and out, for better or worse. Plus, we've had all of this news surrounding the Pittsburgh Steelers this offseason. First with the Aaron Rodgers. Will he? Won't he? Well, he did. Then we've got the TJ Watt contract situation. George Pickens is out. DJ Metcalf is in. And then the trade earlier this week with Jalen Ramsey and Jonnu Smith coming into the fold. So say what you want about the Steelers, and granted, a handful of those positions might need their AARP cards at some point here soon, Ariel, but they are at least trying to go all in this year.
Trying to go all in, because you know that this defense is aging, but you also have this small window. Last year, the Steelers weren't horrific. They just didn't have the quarterback that was like the correct fit. I mean, just looking at the AFC North, it's always such a very closely contended division, even when you don't think it'll be. The Steelers had 10 wins going over their 8.5 win total last year. The Bengals had 9, and they had a down year last season. But again, to have everyone 9 wins or more is still pretty impressive for the AFC North. Stormy, I know the Ravens are the favorites to win the division, rightfully so. Bengals don't have a defense. Steelers are old. Ravens, best all-around team. They're just going to probably find a way to lose in the divisional round. Like, that's my essential quote-unquote. Is it a hot take? I don't even know.
Hold on. Keep talking about Baltimore because I'm going to go look up that price right now for stage of elimination.
It's 3-1.
So is that the bet then? Yeah. It's people have been betting it obviously.
It's 3-1.
It's +280 right now on DraftKings.
I saw 3-1 for the Ravens to lose in the divisional round and +350 to lose in the championship. So it's telling me that they're more likely to lose in the divisional round again. And then it's going to end up being the Bills and the Chiefs in the AFC championship game, even though I don't necessarily think the Chiefs will be as good this year. But I think the Bills are going to be in the AFC championship game and represent the AFC in the Super Bowl. The Ravens are going to lose.
So, okay, how much of this is just like your heart is hurting you and you've been hurt before so you don't want to go back to the well versus the reality of the situation? Because let's talk a little bit deeper about Baltimore and what they have. Lamar Jackson, statistically, over the last couple of years, has just gotten better, especially when it comes to being a pocket passer. The relationship he has with Todd Monken has clearly flourished on the football field. Last year, 41 passing touchdowns, 4 picks, also rushed for 915 yards and another 4 touchdowns, while, by the way, giving up the lowest sack rate of his career. He's got Derrick Henry, who's an ageless wonder. Zay Flowers, Rashad Bateman, Isaiah Likely, DeAndre Hopkins, I know he's older too, but still a red zone threat. Mark Andrews, so much talent around him and a defense that, while they could use some help in the secondary, was awesome against the run and top 10 in efficiency last year. So why couldn't they get over the hump this year? If everybody continues to get better, why couldn't this be the year?
Lamar Jackson making bonehead decisions in crunch time. And I know that this last year wasn't his fault. It was Mark Andrews dropping the football. There's always some kind of bad mistake made. 2 years ago, it was the coaching staff not running the football against the Chiefs. Last year, Mark Andrews dropping the football, even though the Ravens didn't deserve to, quote-unquote, win that game. It was a come-from-behind potential victory. And now this season, I'm just very worried about Lamar Jackson and making a mistake in the big time. Their secondary is deep, which is why, again, I think this team is going to look really, really good in the regular season. The rest of the division, the Bengals just don't have the defense to contain the Ravens. The Steelers, they don't have the offense to keep up. And the Browns are the Browns. They'll just be a hot mess. So, yeah, the Ravens should win the division. But, I mean, we're looking at the schedule. Right off the bat, it's the Bills. But I don't care what happens week one. It is what it is. But they've got to face the Bills, the Lions, and the Chiefs all within the first 4 weeks of the season. At that rate, you might know how good or bad the Ravens will be. But, Stormy, sometimes you peak too early. And I'm just worried that the Ravens will look good, really good off the bat, then peak too early and get cold at the wrong time. I know I'm not giving enough statistics, but until a team proves to me that they can win in the big game, I can't buy in.
No, it's fair. I understand the rationale. It's one of those until you do it, how am I supposed to believe it types of things. Where I have a bigger question, like, they're going to be a playoff team. They're going to be great. We'll see how far they go. When I look at the season win total at 11.5, I do have questions, though, because of what you just referenced with the start of their season. It is brutal. And you mentioned those first few games at Buffalo. Yes, you get the Browns, but the Lions in Kansas City, and then it's not like the Texans are a gimme game. The Los Angeles Rams are a team people have very high expectations for, potentially repeating in the division, all before the bye. That's, what, 5 of those 6 teams have win totals of at least 9.5 games? And I think that that first stretch of the season for Baltimore, if you are somebody who is invested in that season win total for the Ravens, is going to be critical.
Beyond, especially with Buffalo and Kansas City on the road. They have an early bye week, which they're going to need after that really tough first 6-week stretch. I just don't love having a week seven bye week when you're going to have to face then the rest of your division at the end of the season. So depending on how good or bad the AFC North ends up being, after week 11, it's week 11 on, they still have to face their entire division twice. Outside of Cleveland, they face week two. But starting week 11, they face Cleveland the second time and still have to face the Bengals and the Steelers twice.
Yeah,
that's terrible.
You have to take advantage of the middle of the season because, to your point, the start of the season is tough. And then the back end, week 13, Cincinnati, week 14, Pittsburgh. Like, what are they going to be? We don't know. But division matchups are always tricky, to your point. The Bengals, again, the following week in Cincinnati. The Patriots are a team people expect to be better at Green Bay in Lambeau and in the Steel City in Pittsburgh again. So, yes, this schedule is challenging in part, so you have to take advantage of that middle section, and you do need to get off to a good start if you can. Let's dive.
I couldn't bet that over 11 and a half. I couldn't.
Like, that's, I have all the faith in the world that they're in position. They're rightfully priced to win the division. They're going to be a playoff team. How far can they go? Maybe this is the year for Lamar Jackson. Over 11 and a half is not a bet that I can make or feel comfortable with just based on where the schedule is at. And speaking of difficult schedules, I would like to go back to the Pittsburgh Steelers a little bit because their strength of schedule, ninth overall, most difficult. But from week seven on, they have the worst most difficulty in the league based on opponent and number three most difficult on rest. So if you are somebody who is like me and thinks that Aaron Rodgers is actually going to be a positive asset to this organization, I like a lot of the moves that they're making. I think the Steelers are going to exceed expectations. It's hard to buy in on their season win total, even with the 18 straight seasons of Tomlin, because of the way this schedule shakes out. And granted, we said a very similar thing about this Pittsburgh team last year, and they were 7-2 to start the year, but then hit that gauntlet the back end of the year and things were more difficult. I wonder what that's going to look like here. They have week seven, short week Thursday night football in Cincinnati. Week 10, have to go cross country to LA on Sunday night. So it's a bad body clock game for an East Coast team. Week 11, they host the Bengals who are off a bye. 2 weeks later, they play the Bills who will be off a mini bye playing that prior Thursday. Baltimore the following week, same mini bye. And then week 16 in Detroit is a short week. With them coming off of Monday Night Football. So the rest disadvantage for Pittsburgh, the back end of the schedule, is really difficult as well as the opponents. So take all of that into account when you're looking at this season win total of 8.5 for the Pittsburgh Steelers. But also,
let's not forget, Stormy.
Go ahead.
Let's not forget the revenge angles on Aaron Rodgers, where week one you would think could be a potential gimme against the Jets, but that's a revenge spot against the Jets. Then you also have the Green Bay game, week eight, which is coming after a divisional game back to back, Cleveland, Cincinnati. Then they get to host Green Bay, another revenge spot for Aaron Rodgers.
And people, when Aaron Rodgers hadn't officially signed with the Steelers, everyone was saying, like, well, are we sure this is going to happen? The schedule maker sure as hell thought so with the way this thing played out. No question about it. Before we hit the break here, one last thought, because you mentioned how quarterback has brought the Steelers down year after year, and it's very true. I was going through their list of starting quarterbacks over the last decade. Big Ben at the end, late 30s, had the mobility of a tree. Michael Vick's last season in 2015 played 5 games. Landry Jones, another backup for a few years, started games for Big Ben. Mason Rudolph, Duck Hodges. Then we get the Mitch Trubisky experience, Kenny Pickett, Justin Fields, and Russell Wilson. So with those quarterbacks, they were non-losing seasons. They were 500 or better every year with those quarterbacks. Oh, man. It's just another win.
And then they're calling for Tomlin's head. I think he's done a great job.
More on the AFC North in hour two, though. Trust me. We're wrapping up hour one, though, next. Don't go anywhere.
You're watching Money Moves here on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Take your betting to the next level with First Bet. Sign up now at firstbet.com. That's the number one, stbet.com. And use our promo code VSIN200. That'll score you a 20% rebate on all your wagers the first 60 days, up to $200. Don't miss out. Bet smarter today. Head over to firstbet.com. Again, that's the number one, stbet.com.
Maybe a stupid one, but I'm just spitballing here.
Can it make you say why not?
That wasn't a stupid question.
It's time for Why Not Wednesday.
I mean, why not?
You know when they say it's so crazy it just might work?
Because we're referencing stupid questions in the open, I might as well start here with what was, at least in my opinion, a stupid statement. God bless Paul Feinbaum. Love him with all my heart and soul. Does a great job over at SEC Network. But the statement that he made on Get Up yesterday, talking about and putting the pressure on Arch Manning about him being the greatest college football quarterback that we've seen since Tim Tebow, is a little excessive considering we've seen the dude have two starts so far. But what I will ask you is, can you say why not to Arch Manning being as advertised? All of the pressure that is on this guy's shoulder. He is a Heisman Trophy favorite. The expectations for what he's going to do at Texas this year is one of the teams in contention to win it all. Do you think he can be that guy? Can you say why not?
He could be that guy. My concern, Stormy, is I love to fade the public. The public all is seemingly back on Texas this year the way they were last year. That's my fear. The way the Royals, the Red Sox, everyone in baseball, they loved them. That's where my fear is for Texas and Arch Manning.
My thought, too, if you are betting this market, like, how confident are you that Texas is going to win against Ohio State in week one? Because if he doesn't have a great performance in his debut as the official starter, you're going to get a better number in this market. And I think about that as the Heisman odds just in general all the time, is that you're going to be able to get double-digit odds on the guy you like more often than not. You just got to hold out for the moment to have it happen. So I think Arch Manning is going to be great. I think that the Feinbaum thing was a little bit weird. Like, are we forgetting that Joe Burrow existed? Are we already saying he's going to be better than Cam Newton? Are we saying he's going to be better than Andrew Luck? Like, it just seemed a little bit off the wall. But I'm excited to see what the young kid does. I'm not betting him for Heisman yet, though. What's your first one?
The Los Angeles Chargers will upset the Kansas City Chiefs for the division this year. Why not, Stormy? Why not? They have their number at least once a year.
Girl, I'm all in on this. You already know. We talked about my affinity for the Chargers earlier this week. I believe in Jim Harbaugh. Who's got it better than him? Nobody. I really feel like in year two, the way that offense is going to come together, the pieces that they added in the draft, what they're doing to make life easier on Justin Herbert so that he can be put in a position to take shots and take over games when needed instead of having to be the guy constantly, is huge. So I can absolutely say why not. Plus 310 the price, bet $100, win 310. I would happily put my money up on that one. Even though, Ariel, Kansas City has won 9 straight in the division, and there have been multiple years where I thought they were going to finally take a step back, and what do? They go and win, and I lose money. I don't know what to do here.
Hey, the Atlanta Braves have won their division multiple years in a row, and it finally is coming to an end. So you never know. All good things have to come to an end, Stormy.
God bless. Okay, so we were talking a lot about the AFC North, obviously, and the moves that the Steelers have made. I'm going to go a little bit farther back in the offseason when they signed DK Metcalf. The more I've been thinking about this guy and what Aaron Rodgers has the potential to bring to this offense, can you say why not to DK Metcalf having a career year? His receiving yards prop is set at 950.5. The most yards that he's had in a single season was just over 1,300. And so maybe he won't get to that. Maybe he won't get to 1,300 and 12 touchdowns. But I very easily see him getting over the 1,000-yard mark here. And he and Aaron Rodgers, I think, could be a connection in heaven for the Steelers. Thoughts?
Hey, DK Metcalf just had to deal with Geno Smith, so I think that this feels like somewhat of an upgrade for him. It's kind of crazy to believe that with Geno Smith had 992 receiving yards. He had 2 1,000-yard receiving years the years before. I don't see any problem with taking it over 950.5 on DK Metcalf.
Get the offense moving. I have been like an Aaron Rodgers Jets hater pretty big the last couple years. One of my best bets actually in our NFL betting guide when everybody was high on the Jets going into last season was like, I loved them like no other to miss the playoffs. I was not buying in. Mm-hmm. Something about this situation, I feel like it's going to work. I know it might sound stupid to some of you, but I think that Aaron Rodgers is going to be good there, and I think he's going to be really good for DK Metcalf as his go-to guy. What's next for you?
The Atlanta Hawks have a shot at winning the Eastern Conference. Why not? I know people will say it's not great value because it's 10 to 1 and it was way longer before all these deals were made. Why not take advantage of 10-1 when the Hawks did such a great job? They added Kristaps Porzingis, which helped them defensively. Nickeil Alexander-Walker is going to help them offensively and get younger, and also help with the defense in the backcourt with Dyson Daniels when Trae Young's on the bench. This team got deeper, and the East Stormy is banged up. Tyrese Halliburton and the Indiana Pacers, he's out. Jason Tatum, also with a season-ending injury, he's out for the Celtics. The East has a lot of room for the Atlanta Hawks, who, if they stay healthy, have a lot of talent on that team. I'm looking at the Hawks at 10-1 to win the East.
Yeah, we still don't know necessarily what the Bucks are going to be just yet, too. So I love the Alexander Walker pickup specifically for the Hawks. Like, seems like a really good fit with Trae Young in Atlanta. Can play on and off the ball. Great defender. 40% three-point shooter. Can do a lot of good things for them. So absolutely, why not? The Eastern Conference is wide open. It's hard to really go somewhere and for me to say, no, I don't like something in the Eastern Conference unless it's the Philadelphia 76ers. That's the only one I can't get on board. I can't get on board. How about this one? So can you say why not to us having a first-time Super Bowl champion this year? Now, I'm not saying that the Browns are going to win it, but the Browns, Bengals, Bills, Cardinals, Chargers, Falcons, Jags, Lions, Panthers, Texans, Titans, and Vikings have never won a Super Bowl. Crazy thing. We have 12 teams in the National Football League who have not won a Super Bowl before. Could we get a first-time winner this year?
We definitely could. I'm the one that's saying that the Buffalo Bills are going to win the AFC and go to the Super Bowl. I love the Bills this season. There are a lot of really good teams on that list between the Bills, the Chargers, Minnesota, Houston, Detroit. Those teams, and I don't want to discredit the Bengals. I just think defense wins championships. But the other teams, yeah, there's definitely a chance we could see it happen, Stormy. We've seen it happen now for the first time in the NBA with the Oklahoma City Thunder.
I know we're going to talk more about the Bengals a little bit later when we continue our AFC North conversation, but the defense was brutal last year, and what are they doing to get better? Like, and your best player, you still don't have a contract situation figured out for Trey Hendrickson, and your first-round rookie that's supposed to help you up front as well, you can't get his contract figured out. So a lot of just off-season issues for a side of the ball that is already filled with issues. I've got a little bit of a fun one here. And, it looks like so do you. Actually, do yours. Do yours. What's your next one?
The hot dog eating contest is better than fireworks on the 4th of July. Why not? Watch the hot dog eating contest. It is so fun. It's funny. You could see history be made. We're not making history with fireworks, Stormy.
Girl, it's not a debate. Fireworks, and maybe this is a hot take, fireworks are weak. I do not care about fireworks whatsoever. The thing that I actually put in here for my Why Not Wednesday is, can you say why not to ending the 4th of July fireworks at a reasonable hour? Because it's not freaking New Year's Eve, okay? But yet every year on the 4th of July, it's the middle of the night, 2 o'clock in the morning, and people are still busting off their fireworks. I don't need that. Your girl's got to sleep. We've got an early morning. But in general, if you've seen one firework, you've seen them all. I don't care. We don't need fireworks. You know what I do care about? I care about the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. I care about people challenging themselves physically and mentally in the conditions, in the elements, doing what they can for America, Ariel Epstein. Fireworks are weak.
That is America's sport right there, the Nathan's Hot Dog Eating Contest. Fireworks, in New York City, you can mistake them for gunshots. It's terrible. I can't have that happening past the certain hour of the night.
I don't even have an animal, but you know it's going to get the dogs barking. You know that it's going to cause a stir in a negative way. I don't know. I've just never been into it. It's like it's something that you're driving and it distracts you in the thing. And there's always inevitably that person who posts a 10-minute long video on their Instagram of the fireworks show that nobody cares about unless it's you and you were seeing it in person. It's like when you take pictures of your food at the holidays. Like, no, cool, eat your food. Like, we don't need to see all
of
your stuff.
We've all seen the food before. We've literally seen that meal.
We know what stuffing looks like at Thanksgiving. This isn't like a new thing. All right, anyways, I'm getting a little bit too riled up. Our producer loves all of the things that we are downing right now. So please tweet at us, at Ariel Epstein, at Prop Queen Sports, at Storm Bonantoni, at VSIN Live. If you have an opinion on fireworks, we want to know it, and it better be bad. Okay, we're going to take a quick timeout when we come back, resetting hour two of the program. Lots of Major League Baseball on deck and some score updates for you. Don't go anywhere.